Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Thursday, June the 13th, 2013, and here are our top stories.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News. What a surprise. The State Department hired agents with criminal records. And the Supreme Court strikes down patents on human genes. And Gigi Urnetta interviews Mike Freeman, Weld County Commissioner of Northern Colorado, who talks about forming their own state. All this and more on tonight's InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, we know recently there was a court case in Connecticut where a police officer sued because he was not being hired because his IQ was too high. They were looking for people that had a more average IQ, around 100, and his IQ was 125. We also know that TSA agents have been caught in numerous criminal activity, and we even had the famous ad in Craigslist out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, that's encouraged applicants to, quote, be part of an imperious security team, protecting airports and skies as you proudly establish your future. Sieg Heil. Well, it turns out now that the State Department has been hiring criminals in large numbers, as a matter of fact. In a New York Post article, it says the State Department is hiring an alarming number of law enforcement agents with criminal or checkered backgrounds. The memo said, hiring practices for DS agents and IMers, the department intakes of new officers since the hiring surge a decade ago, have reportedly been flawed with mitigation of troubling histories, including criminal matters. Too many people entering the diplomatic security and information management communities end up as subjects of special investigation division investigations and HR adjudications and become giglio impaired and can play only limited roles thereafter. Now, to say that somebody is giglio impaired is kind of bureaucracy speak, refers back to a Supreme Court decision involving a person by the name of Giglio. And in that case, they had jury notification had to be made that witnesses had made deals with the government to induce testimony. In other words, they were kind of cooking the books. And that's the situation we've got at the State Department. Can it be? I mean, can the State Department be filled with criminals? The same people that did Benghazi?
Muhammad is our messenger, and the Quran is our constitution.
Yeah!
Again, we were misled that there were supposedly protests, and then something sprang out of that, an assault sprang out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But
and the American people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator. Now,
we shall loot the goods, the camels, any animals, and anything else of value.
Were they denied requests for help during the attack?
Well, we are finding out exactly what happened. I can tell you, as I've said over the last couple of months since this happened, that the minute I found out what was going on, I gave three very clear directives. Number one, make sure that we are securing our personnel and doing whatever we need to. Number two, we're going to investigate exactly what happened to make sure it doesn't happen again. Number three, find out who did this so we can bring him to justice.
What God is this that is such an oppressor and so unfair to the people?
And last quick question I have for you, Congresswoman, because you have been an ambassador, you have been overseas with similar responsibilities and similar missions, who gives such an order to stand down? Where does that come from?
The President of the United States.
And that is what we saw play out in the last 2 weeks. There's a crude and disgusting video sparked outrage throughout the Muslim world. Now, I have made it clear that the United States government had nothing to do with this video. And I believe its message must be rejected by all who respect our common humanity. It is an insult not only to Muslims, but to America as well.
And let me be very clear here. It's very rare for a
group of rioters to gather in hours of darkness. It kind of prevents the whole idea of seeing the protest. So that was right off the bat peculiar. And, yeah, these feeds are being seen globally. Everybody who has a top-secret SCI feed, this is the highest level of system, well, can dial into this. And when an attack is ongoing, Alex, everybody tunes in. In this case, a DOD drone was loaned to CIA, put under CIA control, and from that point on, I estimate probably about 10 o'clock, everything was being seen in real time. So everybody here, and keep in mind that 10 o'clock there is about sometime in the, about 8 hours later here. So we're talking about essentially all of this happening during the beginning of and throughout the process of a business day.
Would a highly decorated career diplomat have told you or Washington had there been a demonstration outside his facility that day?
Yes, sir, he would have.
Did he mention one word about a protest or a demonstration?
No, sir, he did not.
First of all, let's be clear about what transpired here. What happened this week in Cairo, in Benghazi, was a result, a direct result of a heinous and offensive video that was widely disseminated that the U.S. government had nothing to do with.
What was your reaction to that?
I was stunned. My jaw dropped.
So Ambassador Rice directly contradicts the evidence on the ground in Libya. She directly contradicts the president of Libya. She directly contradicts the last statement uttered by Ambassador Stevens.
One of the reasons we had our own people on the ground and why we were looking to try to figure out how to better protect Benghazi and how to have understandings with those in the annex is because it's a host country responsibility, but, you know, they were not in a position to do what we would expect from an organized country.
Marina!
Daddy, what's going on?
There is an angry mob in the street. Tell your mother to release all the patients and close the clinic. We must go home now.
Okay, Daddy.
Freeze. Do not take any action until everything is over.
Well, recently there was quite a bit of discussion about Angelina Jolie's double mastectomy because she had seen indicators that she might be genetically predisposed to have breast cancer. Now, part of the controversy of that was the fact that that test was a very expensive test, over $3,000. And it wasn't just that the test was patented. The company actually patented the human gene that they had identified as being the gene they believe is an indicator for breast cancer. Now, in a striking Supreme Court decision today, that was thrown out. Wired magazine reports the Supreme Court strikes down patents on human genes. The patents the justices unanimously invalidated gave Myriad Genetics, the defendants in the case, a virtual monopoly on predictive testing for breast and ovarian cancer, according to the suit. Women who feared that they might be at increased risk were barred from having anyone look at their BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes or interpret them except for the patent holder, which charged about $3,000 per test or more. The complex decision means that Myriad may patent its tests, but others are not forbidden from performing their own non-infringing tests of the genes at issue or of patenting their own tests. Patents for exclusive genetic testing have also been issued for a host of genes, including those related to cystic fibrosis, heart arrhythmias, and hemochromatosis. Now, the interesting thing about that is that what they struck down was the idea that they could patent something that they had not created. An amazing amount of clarity of thought and honesty from the Supreme Court, something that we certainly didn't see in the Monsanto decision, which essentially allowed Monsanto to trespass genetically, so to speak, on other people's strains of corn, because that's what's going to happen with that Supreme Court decision. It's already happened in other countries and eventually wound up to with the banning of Monsanto and its GMO products from those other countries. So we'll see how those decisions turn out. But a rational decision for once from the Supreme Court. Now, what's been breaking in this last week, for the most part, has been news about the criminal activity, the spying and the lying coming from high in Washington, from the intelligence community and from the administration. And in an article from InfoWars, John Rappaport, an opinion piece, asked if this was the CIA giving the NSA documents to Ed Snowden. He said, this was a covert op launched by the CIA against a chief rival, the NSA. NSA, the agency that's far bigger than the CIA. The NSA, the agency that's been taking over all intelligence gathering, that considers itself superior to everybody else in the intelligence field. Now, he does raise interesting questions in the opinion piece, like, how does a new guy who's just there for a few weeks, how does he get access to so much high-level information so quickly, so totally? And so he's kind of concerned, you know, is this a situation where this is an intentional, and there's a lot of different options. It might not just be the internecine fighting that he's talking about between the CIA and the NSA. It could also be an effort to intimidate the public. It could be a controlled leak to actually acclimate the public gradually to what's going on. Just show a little bit of this massive iceberg, just the tip of it, and let that get out into the public and talk to people about that. Let them get acclimated to these kinds of infringements, all the while denying that they're really doing anything other than just looking at phone numbers and when somebody calls somebody else, but not actually looking at the content. We see all kinds of denials about that. And yet we've had people telling us, many leakers, many whistleblowers have been telling us for quite some time that they're looking at all of our content. Now, in another piece from InfoWars, Alex Jones and Paul Joseph Watson ask if this NSA spying is really about intimidating the media and American citizens. They say that former head of the NSA's Global Digital Data Gathering Program, William Binney, confirmed that the witch hunt targeting Edward Snowden is not about preventing terrorists from discovering how they're being tracked by the NSA. They've known that for quite some time. It is about preventing the American people from finding out about the unconstitutional actions of the NSA. And, you know, of course, we have Peter King, who is going after Glenn Greenwald and actually saying that he and other media organizations ought to be targeted for criminal actions. And they go on in the article to say, the reason for the persecution of whistleblowers and media outlets who leak evidence of government wrongdoings is to intimidate the free press and to make them less likely to publish information about government corruption for fear of legal reprisals. Another whistleblower, Thomas Drake, former senior NSA executive, decorated Air Force and Navy veteran, says the government is incensed at Snowden and the media outlets that carried his story because Snowden exposed how the NSA is acting in, quote, direct violation of the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and how the NSA is subverting the Constitution. Well, the question is, what does the American public think about this? More specifically, what does the American public think about the trade-off between liberty and the promise of security? Because it's not security, it's just a promise. What you wind up with is tyranny, and tyranny never gives you liberty. Well, new polls are showing that Americans are decrying the NSA spying and that they view Snowden as a patriot. If you'll remember, initially, the first poll out from the Pew Research Center found that 56% of Americans supported the NSA, quote, tracking the telephone records of millions of Americans, unquote. But the article points out a new Gallup poll conducted this week finds that more Americans disapprove, that is 53%, than approve, 37%, of the federal government agency program that, as a part of its efforts to investigate terrorism, obtained records from U.S. telephone and internet companies to, quote, compile telephone call logs and internet communications, unquote. Now, also in that article, I point out that a Gallup poll correlates with a new CBS News poll, which is separate from it, which also found that 58% of Americans disapprove of the government collecting, quote, phone records of ordinary Americans. Now, it just goes to show how with a push poll, you can get any kind of result pretty much that you want. So the questioning and the way it was put out there, we see two polls basically showing that 50, almost 60% of the people disapprove, whereas the first poll showed that 60% approved. So it's really kind of the way the thing is worded. And that's one of the reasons why we have a hardcore constitutional republic, not a democracy. Because the public is very fickle, can be easily manipulated by the press, by politicians. That's why we have the Constitution. That's why it really matters what it says. And all the wiggle room and the lies that we see coming out of Washington doesn't change anything that's guaranteed by the Constitution. And that brings us to our quote of the day from John Adams. He says, liberty cannot be preserved without general knowledge among the people. Absolutely. They have to understand that they will never get security by giving up their liberty. The people who are looking for that are not the people you can trust to deliver on their promises. Now, pretending to be accountable, we've got General Alexander going before the Senate today in a secret meeting. Earlier this week, he went before the House and talked to them. And the Daily Caller reports that because his answers require the disclosure of sensitive details about NSA operations, the meeting will no longer be public. They were going to have a public meeting, but if you recall, we have videotape from back in March when James Clapper, the Director of Intelligence, went before the House and was videotaped lying to them. He was very clearly asked by Representative Wyden if there was any information, a very inclusive question, if there's any information that they were collecting on people, and he said no. So he's been caught very dramatically lying about that. So I understand that they're very gun-shy about doing any public testimony about this. So they're meeting in closed doors, first on Tuesday with members from the House, and now today they met with members from the Senate. Now, on the Tuesday meeting, we had the Hill reports that NSA revelations were only the tip of the iceberg. Well, lawmakers demanded the briefings after revelations last week about the NSA's collection of phone records and internet data, and Representative Sanchez said lawmakers were astounded by what they heard. Now, over and over again, what we're seeing is that lawmakers know in these secret committee meetings, they know about the actions that the NSA is conducting and the CIA, but they're not allowed to come out and speak about it. They're trying to get these intelligence officers to be candid and truthful about what's happening so people can decide if this is within the law, if this is what people want to see, if it's constitutional. But they continue to hold these meetings mostly in secret. And like I mentioned before, when they hold them in public, as Clapper did, they get caught lying frequently because they just can't seem to tell the truth. But it's not just phone records, and it's not just electronic communications, and it's not just Washington. It's even at the state government level that we see the government snooping and prying into people's affairs. Out of Daytona Beach, we see in the News Journal that the Attorney General there says that prescription drug abuse database is unconstitutional in a lawsuit that's being brought up there. Florida's prescription drug monitoring database program violates the state constitution, invades the privacy of residents, and subjects them to unreasonable searches according to an amended complaint filed Wednesday in circuit court in Volusia County. Florida prescription drug monitoring program was launched in 2011 to track drugs such as oxycodone and hydrocodone, as well as other medications, including anti-anxiety drugs and sleeping pills. Just think about it, said the lawyer who's bringing the complaint. The state attorney has the prescription drug information of over 3,000 people. That's wrong unless those over 3,000 people were legitimate targets of a criminal investigation. But no one has suggested that. This was a very, very broad net that was cast, and it got a whole lot of fish. See, the thing about the Fourth Amendment is that you are innocent until proven guilty, that the government needs to have a reasonable cause to search your person and your personal effects. And what we see happening here in Florida on prescription drugs is essentially what the federal government is doing in the name of combating terrorism. And that is treating everyone as if they are criminals, looking at everyone's private lives, and doing it without a reasonable cause. Because they have no reason to suspect that millions of Verizon customers and other customers of other carriers were engaged in terrorist activity. They are phishing. The same thing is happening in Florida. They're assuming that everyone who's getting prescription drugs is a drug abuser. And essentially, they're going to look over your personal records until you prove you're innocent to their satisfaction. Now, the bills are finally in for Bilderberg. And it looks like the world's richest people meeting in secrecy, and the security services that were set up to allow them to do that are going to be paid by the taxpayer. Security operations surrounding secret Bilderberg meeting in Watford, England last week cost a whopping £1 million, according to police, and British taxpayers are set to foot at least half of the bill. Police are still negotiating, local police, that is, with the Home Office over how much they will have to pay toward the cost of the meeting, having applied for an emergency grant solely for the purposes of hosting the Bilderberg Group in Hertfordshire. Before the confab started, police had also underestimated the amount of protesters that would attend, believing that only 100 would show up. When 2,000 people had entered the designated protest area inside the grounds of the Grove Hotel on Saturday, police instigated a one-in, one-out policy and began turning people away as hundreds of people more came. Now, we've got an interview coming up with Leanne McAdoo, who was there at Bilderberg with Alex covering what was going on. And she was at the Bilderberg Fringe Festival, of course, and she's going to be talking to the lady who organized that. And stay tuned, because right after the break, we've got Gigi Urneta talking to someone about what's being done in northern Colorado to protect individual liberties there. So stay tuned. Now you can watch the InfoWars Nightly News streaming live, as it happens, for free.
Check it out at InfoWars.com/show.
The important thing about the Pro One filter today is that the material we use for removing fluoride and other heavy metals now will remove the latest form of fluoride called hydrofluorosilicic acid. There's no other fluoride reduction filter out there that will remove that type of fluoride. And it's extremely important, because today we're hearing more and more cities are using that form of fluoride.
We've been having medication forced on us through the water system for quite a while. Most people don't realize it. Most people don't realize the negative effects of fluoride.
There's a wide range of health effects that are attributed to fluoride.
Bottom line, why should somebody get this new Pro One ProPure filter?
The reason to buy the Pro One, it's an all-in-one filter. It's convenient, easy to use. It doesn't require the add-on fluoride filter. And in addition, this filter removes the latest form of fluoride called hydrofluorosilicic acid.
I'm Darren McBreen, and these are some of the new items that are available now at InfoWarsShop.com.
Alert the public to Obama's blatant abuse of power with the new Obama t-shirt. Obama's Joker face on the front and come and take it on the back. It's time to publicly call him out for what he is, a tyrant. Defend the Second Amendment with our top seller come and take it t-shirts. And look at that, women's cut tank tops and t-shirts now available. Nice hat. Plus, the Don't Tread on Me flag. And now you can become a micro distributor of the InfoWars magazine. Plus, get your own copy delivered right to your door each and every month. And if you're tired like I am of you and your family being exposed to polluted drinking water, get the Pro One High Performance Water Filter. It gets rid of all pathogenic bacteria, cysts, fluoride, heavy metals, and numerous other contaminants.
So join the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
This year's Bilderberg gathering marked the largest ever turnout of protesters, with numbers totaling more than all the other Bilderberg protests combined. Now, that is due in large part to Silke Carlo. She organized the first annual Bilderberg Fringe Festival. Now, Silke is a social and political sciences graduate from Cambridge University, a London activist, and a lot of you may recognize her as the mildly attractive crew member aboard the Bilderbarge. Silke, thank you so much for being with us. It's lovely
thank
to see you,
you
again.
Yeah, lovely to see you too.
So how did you first learn about Bilderberg, and what was it about this particular meeting of the elites that sort of inspired you to occupy their meeting?
I heard about Bilderberg years ago, actually through reading David Icke's books and then becoming politically engaged. And my curiosity, I think, was cultivated by the fact that year on year, the mainstream media just refused to report on it. And year on year, you would have a few lone researchers, people like Alex Jones, who would be outside and getting the information out there about the powerful people who were going inside and the kind of intimidation that journalists and researchers were suffering just for trying to document that. And so I suppose what it was this year, with the Bilderberg meeting coming to my own country, that I felt a great sense of responsibility to be involved in organising a demonstration and trying to get the press down there and gathering all of the concerned citizens together in one space outside the meeting to finally kind of draw the mainstream media attention that it really needed.
And how did you feel about the coverage this year? I know it was like the first year we actually garnered a lot of mainstream attention. How do you think they covered the event?
I think in general, I mean, the fact that we had an awful lot of mainstream media coverage and internationally as well was an enormous success. A lot of it was still quite superficial and not really investigative. But I think it's not a huge problem because that's kind of dinosaur media. It's now online alternative media, where media is disintermediated, and that information has been out there for a while now and will continue to be. And it's people like Alex Jones, I suppose, who are going to continue to do the really investigative work around Bilderberg that needs to be done. And lots of other people like Charlie Skelton and The Guardian's done an amazing job, Tony Gosling, Explosive Reports. So the real research is out there, but the fact that Bilderberg is even being discussed now in the mainstream media was an enormous success.
Right. I noticed a lot of, well, there were a few reporters out there, maybe from the BBC and other places, that were sort of avoiding the protesters that really had a lot of knowledge of the event itself.
Yeah, it was the BBC. It's just embarrassing. And I think actually, you know, we might consider taking that further. As a public broadcaster, they have a duty to report the news factually. And they made an absolute mockery of Bilderberg and of the Fringe Festival outside. And every other mainstream media outlet and alternative media outlet did a much better job than them. And they should be ashamed.
Exactly. It sort of seems like they weren't really taking it seriously. And then, of course, they had Alex Jones on the Sunday Politics show. And, you know, really it was like poking a bear. I think Charlie Skelton said that in one of his articles. But I think it definitely helped sort of wake up some of the people there that are a little, you know, a little more reserved.
Yeah, I mean, it was the most watched news piece on the BBC that day and into the next day, that clip of Alex on the Sunday Politics show. And I mean, that really, it's not the way that I think, you know, the chattering middle classes on a Sunday morning want to discuss politics, but perhaps, you know, perhaps it is necessary. And, you know, it was the Texan style came to the UK, which was interesting. And I hope that if one thing came out of that, that people went away and went on Infowars.com or Googled Bilderberg and found out more.
Exactly. The Texas tornado.
Yeah.
So now we're obviously seeing a lot about the G8 protests that are going on there in London. And I guess that's one way of sort of organizing a protest and being an activist. But the Fringe Festival was a lot different. So why did you sort of organize the Fringe Festival to be the way that it was? And do you think that that was a more effective way to protest?
Yeah, I think this is a new style of demonstrating. I think the reason that it was important to have a Fringe Festival for Bilderberg was because it's a lot about education for us, because it's kind of, you know, for years it's been the conference that shall not be named. People don't know what it is at all. People think it's a German bear-making factory. I mean, literally people don't have any idea about what it is. So the most important thing was to give the people that have dedicated years to researching it a platform to talk about it and to discuss it. I think that will be a new style of demonstrating. And in fact, even it maybe has rubbed off on the G8 protests a little, because they've also held a carnival against capitalism. Whether that's just branding or not, I don't know. But definitely, I think this is a really interesting time. I think that we're now becoming a counterculture. And so you're going to see more kind of cultural expressions, like through the Fringe Festival. And then the time will come when we cross that police barrier. And I think it's not yet. I think we're going to build in numbers. But I think that time will come that the direct action comes out of a growing counterculture.
And so what was your experience there working with the police? I kind of got the feeling that there was a little bit of good cop, bad cop going on, and I didn't know if it was, you know, because the police sort of helped to organize this, that they really kind of corralled us into this free speech zone, whereas in years past, I feel like people probably would have gotten around the entire barrier of the hotel. So what was the experience like working with the police, and do you think that Fringe Festivals at the next annual Bilderberg meeting should work with them in the future?
I hope so. I mean, I have to say, overall, I think the interactions and communication with the police was so encouraging, and it was just great. I mean, we were on private land. It wasn't public land. You know, public land, you can protest wherever you want, really, but we had to negotiate to allow the Grove Hotel to actually allow us to be there. And it was kind of on the basis of, you know, a very subtle threat. You know, when I was ringing the police, I was saying thousands of people will be there. We can play it both ways. We can be in the road causing roadblock, if you like, or you can keep us in this kind of free speech zone. And I just felt on this occasion, us being in the kind of free speech zone was the best way to go. Because it was a very peaceful and happy event, and we got an enormous amount of media coverage, and we brought lots of people together who have networked and who will continue building. It meant we could give a platform to David Icke and Alex Jones and Tony Gosling and Charlie Skelton and all the other wonderful speakers that we had that weekend as well. So I hope very much so that we can continue to work with the police in that kind of really cooperative way. I've been on too many demonstrations and protests where you just expect to get battered around by riot police, and I really don't think it's the way forward. The model that we had this time, we were able to talk to the police and actually get them on side as well, I think, and that's going to be really important in the years to come.
Right, I definitely noticed that by the end of the weekend, a lot of the police were kind of on our side. And, of course, the next day when Ed Balls said, yes, we're definitely going to go after the pensions if we need to, I kind of wonder if a lot of the police were sort of remembering what we had all been telling them all weekend about what they were planning there at the Bilderberg meeting, so...
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I think especially given that there are cuts being made to policing, and yet the public have had to foot £500,000 bill for the security / secrecy operation is really what it is. There was no tangible security threat from the protesters. So the public are footing a bill for what's supposedly a private meeting. And meanwhile, there are public spending cuts everywhere else, including for the police and including for their pensions. So I think we're all aware that every single one of us is getting shafted by the establishment, and that includes the police.
Well, Silky, do you have any advice for young people out there who, you know, a lot of us are really trying to fight the reality TV brainwashing and to just kind of get up off our butts to do something? Do you have any advice to offer young people out there who want to be more politically active?
Yeah, definitely. And just, you know, do it. There are so many different facets that you can do this, and one way is to get information out there, start connecting dots. I've been going through the news since Bilderberg, and you can draw so many links to what's going on and this criminal elite. Bilderberg is just one of the elements that we need to fight, and whichever country is unfortunate enough to have Bilderberg imposed on it next year needs to stand up and organize the same kind of demonstration that we did this year, but only 10 times bigger. And then for everyone else around the world, you know, the elite will be landing itself on you soon, and you have to stand up and you have to fight back. So on the one hand, there's the ongoing info war that everyone needs to participate on, whether it's within your own friendship group or at college or at school or in the internet to thousands of people across the world. And then on the other hand, there's direct action and counterculture. So there's loads of ways that we need to fight back.
Definitely. And so are you going to be, is the Fringe Festival going to be at Bilderberg next year? Or are you going to be heading out to the G8? What are the future plans for Fringe Festival?
I'm not sure. I mean, for me, I feel like whichever country Bilderberg comes to next, the activists in that country will be best placed to organize a demonstration, whether that's a Fringe Festival or not, against Bilderberg, because they understand the laws, they speak the language, they know the police. They'll be best placed to do it. I'll probably be there, and so will the other organizers. And then, yeah, like I said, I mean, Bilderberg is just one facet of this very complex criminal elite that we're fighting and globalist agenda. So I think I will be organizing at many more events in the future, I hope.
Well, that'll be wonderful. It's definitely nice to have a nice, educated, sane person there at the forefront of the Fringe Festival. How did you enjoy the Builder Barge?
It was absolutely insane. Alex Jones is a fireball. He was like a Texan Churchill stood atop the barge going through Watford's Canal. I mean, it was just absolutely surreal. It was hilarious. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. It was definitely unexpected. Well, it was a pleasure to meet you, and hopefully I'll be seeing you next year at
Me
Bilderberg,
too.
And we'll keep our eye on you. Thanks, Sophie.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, and if you want to learn more about the true global power structure and their plans for the New World Order, go to the InfoWarsStore.com and check out Endgame. And for a limited time, you can actually get Endgame and Invisible Empire for less than $30. I'm Leanne McAdoo with the InfoWars Nightly News. We'll be right back with Gigi Urnetta. She'll be speaking with a Colorado commissioner who is backing the formation of a new state.
Hey, now you can watch the Alex Jones Show live as it happens at InfoWars.com/show.
Many anthropologists and archaeologists believe that before man even discovered the power to harness and use fire, we were involved in agrarian activities. That is, taking the seeds of plants and then replanting them to produce more. The very foundation of our modern civilization and human culture is centered around the planting and cultivation of edible plants, fruits, vegetables, nuts, you name it. And the globalists have been going after gardening. They've been harassing people that have gardens in their front yards or their backyards. They've called for licenses for people to have gardens because you can't trust prisoners in the police state America to be able to grow their own food. That's why I've come to the realization that we need to become self-sufficient. You need to be informed. You need to have the Second Amendment to protect yourself. You need to be politically active to wake up others. You need to filter your water. But you also need to plant a garden. Even if you live in an apartment, you can do this. If you live in the countryside, obviously you can do it on a grand scale. There are so many green belts in areas that humans don't even visit, nearby cities and in suburbs, where people are now more and more planting their own little private gardens and meadows and off the side of the road. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a revolutionary act to unplug from the television, to unplug from the computer and all the globalist propaganda, and to go out in your backyard or your front yard or planters at your apartment or on the roof of the building where you live, and to plant a garden.
Here are some of the amazing deals at InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsShop.com. The Survival Seed Vault by My Patriot Supply features only the finest survival heirloom seeds for a robust and hardy garden, even in the toughest of times. The ARC All-in-One Seed Kit contains 70 varieties of 50,000 seeds of fruits, vegetables, medicinal, and culinary herbs. All ARC seeds are heirloom. Each type is labeled and sealed separately for ease of use and longevity. The Deluxe Emergency Seed Bank combines three of Emergency Seed Bank's top sellers. The Family Survival Emergency Seed Bank, the Medicinal Herb Seeds Pack, and the Culinary Herb Seeds Pack. We also have starter varieties of the deluxe seed packages for fruit, salad, salsa, peppers, and medicinal herbs and more. Go to the InfoWars Seed Center at InfoWarsShop.com.
A little seed can grow a huge tree that produces fruit for up to 50 years. We have the best life bombs. That's what these are. We have the best weapons against death out there at the lowest prices, waiting for you to lovingly plant them and lovingly grow them and lovingly eat them and share them with others. We will strike back against the New World Order, and this is only one more initiative in our fight against them. So please join us at InfoWarsShop.com, or you can link through at InfoWars.com at the InfoWars Seed Center.
Today I'm speaking with Commissioner Mike Freeman of Weld County, Colorado. Right now they're talking about not a secession exactly, but creating a new state, North Colorado. And they are also being considered by Nebraska. Yes, parts of Nebraska want to come to Colorado. So we're going to talk to Commissioner Mike Freeman about that. And they also passed an ordinance to protect their people, to make sure that they don't lose any of their Second Amendment rights. That's right. It's a ordinance that actually limits themselves on gun control. So let's talk to Mike. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, it's great to be here.
So your county is experiencing a lot of new things.
It's always interesting in Weld County. We're looking at several things we're looking at maybe forming a new state, as well as I know you were interested a little bit in some of the gun ordinances and things that we're doing here in Weld County.
Yes, let's start with the gun situation and your new ordinance so that we can clarify. I know there's been a lot of things out in the news media that might not be reading right. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to actually clarify your ordinance. I have it here in front of me. It looks like the main thing here is that you want to make sure people have their Second Amendment rights, that they have that available to them and that that's not stripped from them. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Actually, what this is, it was really a citizen-driven thing that, we had a lot of citizens come to us that were upset about the new gun laws that were signed into law, here in the state of Colorado, and wanting to know if there was anything that we could do about that. And, we explained to them that obviously we can't do anything to supersede state law. Weld County is an arm of the state government, so we couldn't pass anything or do anything that would supersede state law. So what we did do was that we actually passed an ordinance that said that the Weld County commissioners today and future commissioners would not pass any laws or any ordinances that would restrict their Second Amendment rights. But that being said, we are still having to completely enforce state laws.
Right. And how is that being received in your area?
I think it's very well received. I think probably there's some disappointment that we couldn't actually do more than what we did, but I think they're happy that it's a first step, and we're at least willing to stand up for what our citizens believe and do at least whatever it is that we can do to protect their Second Amendment right.
What are you hearing from them regarding this particular ordinance? If they could have more, what would it be exactly?
Well, obviously, they would like us to say that we are going to disregard state law. They would like the law to be different in Weld County. Obviously, that's something we can't do. So I think they're satisfied that we've done as much as that we can do, even though they're disappointed that we can't do more.
Now, is there a possibility that somewhere down the road the law that the governor actually put in might be repealed or something might change? Is that a possibility? Or
I think it's a very good possibility. We actually have 54 sheriffs that have filed a federal lawsuit against the state of Colorado challenging the constitutionality of this new law. And obviously we can't be a part of the lawsuit in Weld County because we would essentially be suing ourselves. But what we can do and what we will do and I think a number of other counties will do is file an amicus brief in support of the sheriff's lawsuit.
And when do you think that might happen? Do you have anything planned out?
It just depends on the court system. We can't do anything as far as actually filing something like that until it actually gets into the courts and they come to the conclusion that they're going to accept the lawsuit and go forward. So we can't. I have no time frame. I have no time frame as far as how long it'll take the courts to get to the spot where we are eligible to do that.
Do you guys see yourselves as a leader in your area as far as being around other counties that might want to do the same thing? Are you involved with anything like that?
You mean as far as the ordinance that we passed?
Yes, sir.
I really don't know what other counties are doing. I know that we've had some inquiries as to what we've actually passed. We're in a little bit different situation in Weld County on those kind of ordinances because we're a home rule county. We're one of only two home rule counties in the state. And so I'm not sure with statutory counties, you know, what their actual abilities are to do things like this.
And what does that mean for the people who might not know?
The fact that we're a home rule county?
Yes.
Well, it essentially you went to the vote of the people to write a home rule charter as well as the ordinances that go into that. And so we operate just a little bit differently than a statutory county. So it gives us some leeway and some variance from the state laws that other counties don't have.
Now, do you think that actually helps when it comes to the possibility, and I don't want to say the word secession because I know that's not the right word technically, but you guys are looking at forming another state, North Colorado perhaps. Is this because of this rule, is that something that's helping?
No, I don't think it is. I don't think that gives us any more power as far as doing this. This would be something that is also completely citizen-initiated. It's a conversation that we've had with a number of other counties. And there's a lot of issues that come into this as to the reasons why we're considering doing this. But we would be doing this along with other counties, and it has nothing to do with whether we're home rule or statutory.
What started this?
Well, I think there's a number of things that started it. I think probably it's been coming for several years. But you know, I think last summer when we actually went to the governor this was before I was a county commissioner, just so we're clear on that. I just started in January, but the commissioners went to the governor and asked for if they could get a 30-day stay on the wells, on all these wells that have been shut down in the South Platte, to not turn them back on permanently, but turn them back on for 30 days to allow farmers to be able to save their crops, and they were turned down by that. These are water wells, irrigation wells along the South Platte. And so that kind of started it, and then as we got into this legislative session, I think that it started probably with the gun laws that were passed. I think it went on from there with the attack on oil and gas, and that's extremely important to what's going on in Weld County. And I think the thing that culminated it was Senate Bill 252, which was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, which is an alternative energy bill, which essentially increases the amount of alternative energy that is required to be produced by within the state. They increased that number from 10% of all energy by 2020 to 20% by 2020. But what they did in that is they exempted all of the municipal electric associations and put the entire thing on rural Colorado, whether it's, Poudre Valley REA or a whole bunch of other rural electric associations to foot the bill.
Do you know why that is?
So we believe that was a direct attack from the legislature on rural Colorado and agriculture, not just in Weld County, but throughout northeastern Colorado.
Well, let's start with the water thing and then move into the energy. So what ended up happening with the water wells? Is that a situation that has now changed, or is that on the table for a permanent change?
It's still in the same position. Those wells are shut down. They're still shut down. There's actually a study that was ordered by the legislature last year that is being conducted right now by CSU. The results of that study are supposed to be out by the end of this year. And then from there, I would hope that they have enough information to have the courts go back in and take a relook at the situation. That's also completely out of our hands.
What was the reasoning behind shutting them down in the first place?
During the drought, there was some thought that maybe it was impacting the flow of the South Platte, and so with some junior water right users and so forth. And so it was a court decision, but I think it was a court decision that was based on some erroneous facts. And I think that's the reason for the study, and that's the reason why we're trying to get this in place so that it can be relooked at.
As far as the oil and gas in the area, what was their reasoning for having to raise the standards on the new energy laws that they have there? Was there something, a particular company or something that caused that to happen, or is it just the new administration?
No, I think it's an environmental push that doesn't like oil and gas, that is opposed to fracking. And our concern with that is that Colorado already has the strictest oil and gas regulations in the nation, and we think that we do a very good job with the safety and so forth with oil and gas. We actually have in the county, we have a program set up through our health department that has, if you would like to have your water wells tested, you can come in and ask the county to do that, and they'll do it for free. This program was started late last summer, and I think that we've tested somewhere between 130 and 150 water wells, and every single one of those have come out with no damage to the wells, absolutely in perfect shape, no injury from oil and gas. And so we think that we're doing a good job, and we think that we don't need any more regulations.
Well, it sounds like you should actually be the example for the way for it to be done across the United States instead of being punished for it.
I would agree with that.
Wow. All right, well, let's talk about the non-secession but the new state.
Okay.
What are the benefits to the people in your county, and are there benefits for them to actually allow it to happen in Colorado? What would allow that to happen?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's happened five times in the past in this country, albeit it's been 150 years since the last time, approximately. But, yeah, I mean, the process essentially is if a number of counties decide that that's something that they would like to do, we wouldn't make that decision ourselves as county commissioners. We would put that on the ballot this November and ask our citizens in Weld County if they think it's something that they would like for us to proceed with. I think a number of the other counties would do the same thing, and if that would happen and they would say, yes, this is something we want you to proceed with, then the next steps would be we would present that to the legislature next January. We would actually take that to the Speaker of the House and ask them to file a petition with the United States Congress to allow us new statehood.
And what is, I know you don't have exact dates or anything, but how long would that process really take?
I have absolutely no idea. I truly don't know.
Hopefully not 150 years, right?
No.
All right. And also, how willing is the governor of Colorado willing to let go of you guys? Is he?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, the governor has no say in this. It is essentially the House and the Senate, and that's also true at the United States Congress. It's the House of Representatives and the Senate that would have a say in this. The president has no say. So I'm sure that probably the governor isn't going to be that thrilled about it. But I can't speak for John Hickenlooper.
I understand that parts of Nebraska are interested.
We actually have had some inquiries from some counties in western Kansas and western Nebraska.
So redistricting, is that a possibility between you and Nebraska maybe, or is that way out there?
I think that's kind of way out there. I mean, I think we'll just see where it goes. I think the other thing that's a little bit concerning to us in this entire process is, you know, the amount that Weld County contributes to the economy of the state of Colorado, and we think we're not receiving back what we deserve on that. When you look at the fact that Weld County is the largest ag-producing county in the state and sixth or seventh largest ag-producing county in the nation, as well as the second-largest oil and gas-producing county in the nation behind Bakersfield County, and we produce about 80% of the oil and gas in the state of Colorado. So there's a huge financial impact coming out of Weld County that is being transferred to the state that we don't feel we are getting our fair share back from the state.
What would you say to the people in the United States who might be in the same condition? Being in a rural area versus obviously the city is a big difference. and it sounds like you're carrying more of the weight in all those areas. Do you have something to tell the people that they can do? I know people are frustrated right now. Is there something that they can do in their community to make things better?
Well, I think that, you know, I think it all starts with a conversation with your citizens. And I think that's what, you know, it's one thing that the Weld County Commissioners have always done, I believe, a very good job of, and that is watching out for their citizens, listening to their citizens, and trying to do whatever they can to, you know, improve the lives of their citizens, whether it's fiscally or whatever else that is. So, you know, I think they need to tell the stories. They need to obviously have those conversations. And I do agree. I think it's very true across this nation that rural communities, I think the importance of agriculture, excuse me, and the raising of their food. I think there's too many people in cities that truly believe that their groceries come from King Soopers and Safeway, and they really don't understand what it is and what it takes and the hard work and the financial contribution that agriculture has on this country.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens on your ballot, actually, this fall.
It'll be interesting.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll get to do this again as things progress.
Okay, thank you.
All right. The beautiful thing about this country is that the people can govern themselves, and they need to have their voices heard, and it sounds like Weld County has it down. They're leading the way, and you too can lead the way. Go to InfoWars store and check out the Second Amendment t-shirts. They're great. Actually, the pink one's great for the ladies there. It's a white and pink shirt. I'm Gigi Giornetta for the InfoWars Nightly News. Be sure to join us tomorrow at 7 p.m. Central.
Now you can watch The Alex Jones Show live as it happens at InfoWars.com/show.